Life has sure changed. As we study these people in the Bible, and we see that they make a lot of choices that aren't good, and yet God has chosen through the writer of the Hebrew letter to hold them up regarding their faith. So their personal lives were not always exemplary, but their faith in God to do certain things was good, and he accomplished something through them. God is always in control, and he uses even the evil people and evil nations to accomplish his purposes. But society is really different. I was watching a rerun of Wheel of Fortune last night. And one young lady there, Pat Sajak always asks them a little bit about themselves. And she says, "I'm engaged to a wonderful boyfriend, and we have three children." Oh, come on. You didn't used to hear anything like that, but it's becoming more common. But on a brighter side, a couple of things this fellow wrote about. His nephew, he always played the nephew's favorite game was called Giant Crab. And so the uncle there was acting like a giant crab with the pinchers and all. And they scuffled around on the sofa. And all of a sudden the nephew looked up and looked at the skin hanging under the uncle's neck. And he said, "Uncle Mac, you know what? Your skin is just too big for your body." And the guy says, you know, those over 50 can better relate to this story. And another one about this grandmother, and her grandson was visiting her one day, and the grandson says, "Grandma, do you know how you and God are alike?" And she says, "I mentally polished my halo while I asked, now how are we alike?" He says, "You're both old." Out of the mouths of babes. Well, we've been talking of late about Samson, and Samson certainly is an example of one who, although he was doing God's will in conquering the Philistines, and of course this didn't wipe them out forever. We have the Philistines on the scene later as well, but the circumstances of his birth was also not unique in the Bible. What were the circumstances of Samson's birth? What was the situation with his mother?
She was barren.
She was barren, and of course the angel of the Lord came and spoke to her, and Manoah, her husband, and said Samson would. That she, first of all, would not drink of the vine or strong drink, and then of Samson. Who else in the Bible can you think of had a similar situation? Then God said, "No, Sarah, your wife shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his descendants after him." Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. Who else? Rachel. Who was her husband?
Jacob.
And, well, that was... Okay. I had Rebekah for Jacob, that's for Isaac, okay, Rebekah and Rachel. And then another one that we're going to talk about a little bit later in this quarter, within the next couple of weeks. So it was, year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, that she provoked her, therefore she wept and did not eat. Then Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Hannah, why do you weep?" Who was her son? So Hannah rose after they'd finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. Then she made a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head. And as she said, that was Samuel. What about in the New Testament? Mary? I don't know, it says she was barren, but she was a virgin and conceived of the Holy Spirit. But what about a relative? There was in the days of Herod, the king of Judah, a certain priest named Zacharias of the division of Abijah. His wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. And they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord, blameless. But they had no child because Elizabeth was barren, and they were both well advanced in years. Did you remember that part? They were both well advanced in years. And then this is in Luke, the first chapter, and then verse 13. But the angel said to him, do not be afraid, Zacharias, for your prayer is heard, and your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you shall call his name John. And you will have joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth. And then because Zacharias was a little bit questioning that, what did the angel say would happen to him? Okay, he was going to be mute, couldn't speak until these things took place. And then in Luke 1st chapter, verse 24, it's now after these days, his wife Elizabeth conceived, and she hid herself 5 months, saying, thus the Lord has dealt with me in the days when he looked on me to take away my reproach among people. Now in the 6th month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a city of Galilee named Nazareth, to a virgin betrothed to a man whose name was Joseph of the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary. And then verse 31, and behold, you will conceive in your womb and bring forth a son and shall call his name Jesus. He will be great, be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end. Then Mary said to the angel, how can this be, since I do not know a man? And the angel answered and said to her, the Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Highest will overshadow you. Therefore also that Holy One who is born will be called the Son of God. Now indeed, Elizabeth, your relative, has also conceived a son in her old age, and this is now the 6th month for her who was called barren. So God was able to cause women to conceive and bear children to accomplish his purpose. Talking about Samson, what did Samson do? What was his role? What was his job? Okay, kill the Philistines was his job. And then what else? What did he do? What book is he listed in?
Judges.
He was a judge. And, of course, we've talked a lot about his. You know, people say, I can't wait to get to heaven, and I've got a question I want to ask. And one I want to ask is, how did he get all those foxes tied together? God made it possible. But Samson got himself in trouble several times, and in trouble with women, and he, after holding off for a while, he couldn't say no. Another thing that, in addition to the foxes, that fascinates me is when he went down to Gaza to meet with a harlot, and they were going to come upon him, and he left. But what did he take with him? He took the gates of the city. He went with the gates, with the posts and the bar, and carried them to the top of a hill looking toward Hebron. I can't imagine that. But what size, you know, what are the measurements of the gates of the city?
Pretty big.
Pretty big, yeah. Pretty big. And we already talked about what his physical stature was, which we don't know. But God gave him strength, and he didn't necessarily look like Schwarzenegger, which I was always thinking. But he definitely was very strong. Another thing, this is strictly supposition. After they got him, after he finally told all his heart to Delilah, and they captured him, and they put his eyes out. Actually, in my Bible, in the column, it says literally they bored his eyes out. But after they did that and took him there where they were having the big celebration, and he was there, and says that he made sport for them and placed him between the two chief pillars. What do you imagine he was doing that was making sport for them?
Taunting
him?
Yeah.
They probably were making fun. We got you this time. You've been burning down our fields and killing our people, but this time we got you. And even though he did kill several, what does it say about the number that died? And what was that number compared to the others that he'd killed? Said he killed more at his death than he'd killed before. And yet some of the battles in here, and I think even later when they're talking, when the Philistines, even in the time of Saul, and there was many thousands more than that. After Samson, scriptures and the Hebrews 11 mentions Jephthah. What do we know about Jephthah? What's the common thing that somebody says when you mention Jephthah? He made a rash vow. Jephthah, what was his mother? Yeah, his mother was a prostitute. He was the son of a harlot. And when his father had, his father's wife bore some more sons, they ran Jephthah off. Said, "You have no inheritance in your father's house, for you are the son of another woman." So Jephthah took off. And he dwelled in the land of, not the land of Nod, but the land of Tob. Tob or Tob, T-O-B. And then it came to pass that people of Ammon made war against Israel, and they're the ones that had run him off. So what did they do? They sent people over to Jephthah and said, "Hey, we need your help. Fight for us." He said, "Hey, you ran me out of my house. Now you're asking me to come back and help you?" And they said, "Come be our commander." He said, "Did you not hate me and expel me from my father's house? Why have you come to me now when you are in distress?" And the elders of Gilead said to Jephthah, "That is why we have turned again to you now, that you may go with us and fight against the people of Ammon and be our head over all the inhabitants of Gilead." Jephthah said, if you take me back home to fight against the people of Ammon and the Lord delivers them to me, shall I be your head?" And they said, "Yes, the Lord be witness that you will be our head." So Jephthah went to God and asked God to deliver this people to him, and he said, "If you do, you know what I'm going to do? When I get back home, what? First thing that comes out of my tent, I will sacrifice to God. He says in Judges 11, verse 31, then it will be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the people of Ammon shall surely be the Lord's, and I will offer it up as a burnt offering. When Jephthah came to his house at Mizpah, there was his daughter coming out to meet him with timbrels and dancing, and she was his only child. Besides her, he had neither son nor daughter. And it came to pass when he saw her that he tore his clothes and said, alas, my daughter, you have brought me very low. You are among those who trouble me, for I have given my word to the Lord, and I cannot go back on it. So she said to him, my father, if you have given your word to the Lord, do to me according to what has gone out of your mouth, because the Lord has avenged you of your enemies, the people of Ammon. Then she said to her father, let this thing be done for me. Let me alone for 2 months, that I may go and wander on the mountains and bewail my virginity, my friends and I. So he said, go. And he sent her away for 2 months, and she went with her friends and bewailed her virginity on the mountains. And it was so at the end of 2 months that she returned to her father, and he carried out his vow which he had vowed. She knew no man, and it became a custom in Israel that the daughters of Israel went 4 days each year to lament the daughter of Jephthah the Gileadite. The wording according to some, and I don't know where I put that note, but it says or instead of and, because there's a lot of questioning of what happened here. She was sent off, and it was somewhat of disgrace to not be able to have children. And she went off, and then each year the daughters went 4 days to lament the daughter of Jephthah the Gileadite. And so they went to her in person. So the question is, did he actually offer her as a burnt offering, or was the vow completed by just having her go off and remain without children and remain a virgin? You have any thoughts?
Well, it said that he carried out his vow.
He carried out his vow. But that's the question, whether the vow involved an actual human sacrifice.
God abhorred
human
sacrifice.
God abhorred human sacrifice. And, man, I thought I had labeled the exact place, and I can't find it right now. But it's not going to, as Dan sometimes says, it's not going to be on the final test for us to get into heaven, whether we believe one way or another. But he did have Abraham getting ready to offer Isaac, but he stopped that thing. And certainly in the pagan world at that time, it was not unusual or out of the question. But certainly, as Bill says, God abhorred human sacrifice. And so there's some question. And I always thought, I used to always think that it definitely was a sacrifice, a burnt offering. But in
what would have lived in the tent besides human beings? What would have lived in the tent to come out?
Well, it said in his house, but what would have been in there? Well, pets. I don't know what else would have been in the house besides the daughter. But he certainly was surprised that's what came out. He was not expecting his daughter to come out, obviously. So he was expecting something else to come out, and I think it was more very very common for them to have animals in their dwelling place. But whichever it was, and I tend not to think based on what study. I invite you to study that and get the language there, that it was not actually a burnt offering. But what did what was the good part as far as Jephthah is concerned? He made a vow and he kept a vow. Whatever the final result of that vow was, he kept the vow. He was not deterred and for keeping it. And just as Jephthah might have been wrong in his conception of the character of God, which led to his making this rash vow, and he would not have done right to kill his child, but the guilt of making a vow and not keeping it would have remained. Josephus well characterizes the sacrifice as neither sanctioned by the Mosaic law nor acceptable to God. But Jephthah is listed among the faithfuls in Hebrews the 11th chapter, because he accomplished what God had in store for him to defeat the people of Ammon, and then also to keep his vow. After Jephthah, what's the next name that is mentioned? David. Do we know anything about David? Where is the life of David found in the Old Testament? 1st and 2nd Samuel. And some of these we have very little about, but when we get to David, there's a lot written about David. And usually what stands out in a person's mind when they think of David, his accomplishments. Pardon? Well, he's a man after God's own heart, but what did he do? He killed Goliath. That's what most everybody thinks about. But after Saul was not going to be king, and Samuel went to the house of Jesse, and Jesse had how many sons? That's because I forgot. It's 6 or 8. But they came there and brought all the sons before Samuel, and God said, nope, that's not him. And they finally said, don't you have anybody else? And said, well, we've got one, and he's out in the field watching the sheep. Okay, so there are 8 sons. And Jesse made 7 of his sons pass before Samuel, and Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen these. And Samuel said to Jesse, are all the young men here? Then he said, there remains yet the youngest, and there he is keeping the sheep. Samuel said to Jesse, send and bring him, for we will not sit down till he comes here. So he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy, with bright eyes. Maya in the column says literally beautiful eyes, and good looking. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is the one. Well, God, did he pick him because he was ruddy and bright eyed and good looking? No, we go back to verse 7. Verse 6. It says, so it was when they came that he looked at Eliab and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. So the scriptures is just giving us information about the physical appearance of of David, but that's not why the Lord picked him. But he was picked at that time, but he actually wasn't made king for some time to come. And what was David's relationship with Saul? Sir? Son-in-law? Were they friendly? At times. Yeah, when your father-in-law tries to stick you with a spear, and you kind of don't want to eat at his table, do you? And Saul had a son that was very friendly to David. His name was Jonathan. Skeptics and critics of the Bible, because of David and Jonathan's relationship and how they loved one another, and at one point the scripture says that David loved Jonathan more than the love of a woman, then some have jumped to the conclusion that there was a homosexual relationship there, which is, of course, very far-fetched, and there's no basis for that at all, just because that it said that he loved him greatly. Jonathan helped keep David alive for a while. David was eating at the table of the king, and then he was afraid to go there because of Saul's efforts to get rid of him. So he told Jonathan, says, I'm not going to come to the table tonight. So if he misses me and says something about it, then let me know. Well, he didn't say anything the first night, but the second night he did ask about it. And so there was concern, and they set up a way that Jonathan could tell David that Daddy is really after you this time. Do you remember what it was? Something to do with arrows? But where did he shoot him? Okay. Far away over his head. So when I come and if I shoot the arrows beyond you, that means hightail it out of here, because he's after you. And so he had the young man go and retrieve. After he shot the arrows, he had the young man go and retrieve the arrows. But nobody knew but Jonathan and David what the purpose of it was. So David was also, he was king. His first part of his reign was over who? He was over Judah for 7.5 years. And then after that, he was king over all of Israel for how long? 33 years. So he ruled 40 years total. Who was the king of the other tribes other than Judah? When David ruled over Judah in Hebron for 7.5 years, who was the king over the rest of it? It was Abner. But later on, he died, and David became the king over the whole of Israel. And of course, the personal life of David was similar to others. He was a polygamist, and he also had concubines. And he was told that the sword would never depart from his house. But the closing period of David's life, with the exception of one great calamity, may be considered a gradual preparation for his reign. And there's 3 days of pestilence when he visited Jerusalem at the warning of the prophet Gad. And so a conspiracy broke out in the last days of David's reign, but it was able to be stifled. They were trying to replace David as king with his son named Absalom. My son. But he was able to actually establish and name Solomon as his successor. In 1 Kings, the 2nd chapter. Now the days of David drew near that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man, and keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do, and wherever you turn, that the Lord may fulfill his word which he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons take heed to their way, to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, he said, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. Moreover, you know also what Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me, and what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner, the son of Ner, and Amasa, the son of Jether, whom he killed. And he shed the blood of war in peacetime, and put the blood of war on his belt that was around his waist, and on his sandals that were on his feet. Therefore, do according to your wisdom, and do not let his gray hair go down to the grave. And do not let his gray hair go down to the grave in peace, but show kindness to the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and let them be among those who eat at your table. For so they came to me when I fled from Absalom your brother. And see, you have with you Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite from Bahurim, who cursed me with a malicious curse in the day which I went to Mahanaim. But he came down to meet me in Jordan and said, I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with a sword. Now, therefore, do not hold him guiltless, but you are a wise man and know what you ought to do to him, but bring his gray hair down to the grave with blood. So David rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. The period that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. 7 years he reigned in Hebron, and in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years. Then Solomon sat on the throne of his father David, and his kingdom was firmly established. So David was said to be a man after God's own heart, even though, as we found in all these other heroes, there are flaws, and I guess we could say there are flaws in all of us, perhaps not the extent of some of them, but all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. But it's amazing that one who was so close to God performed of these sins, certainly with Bathsheba and involving the killing of Uriah the Hittite. And David, when the prophet had said that baby's going to die, and David prayed and that God would spare that child. And when the child died, what did David do? He got up and cleaned up. Everybody said, what's going on here? Now the baby's dead. Aren't you mourning anymore? And what did he say? Great words. He can't come to me, but I can come. I can go to him. And so sometimes it's said, when we talk about situations and sins that a person commits, they can be forgiven. But the expression is said, but still the baby died. There are consequences to our sin. And so even though that we can be forgiven, and certainly God can forgive us, and individuals, friends and loved ones can forgive us, but does it not mean that there are not consequences for the sins that we commit? because the baby still died. So David, king of Israel, his whole life was a life of faith and dependence on God, and his character is best seen in the books that give an account of his reign, which is 1 and 2 Samuel, and then the book of Psalms. We get to know David's heart much, much more than we do in studying his life. But his outstanding event, the outstanding act that David is always remembered for, is his killing of Goliath.